Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the URS webinar. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties during the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I'll now turn the conference over to Kurt Prips. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for joining, everyone. I'm going to turn this over to Hayley LaFrambois for a minute of introduction.
Good morning. My name is Hayley LaFrambois. I'd like to introduce you to the URS Uniform Rapid Suspension webinar that we're going to be hosting today. Today's session will last approximately 90 minutes, and you'll be able to ask questions by dialing into the audio bridge by pressing star 1 to get into the queue, or via the chat pod in the Adobe room after each focus area. Please note that you will not be able to ask questions orally via the Adobe Connect room. This session is being recorded and will shortly be available after the webinar on the new DTLD microsite. Lastly, I'd like to remind you to mute your computer, and I will now hand you over to Kurt Prips. Thank you.
Thank you, Hayley, and thanks, everyone, for attending. I'm Uniform Rapid Suspensioner, URS, because we're fond of acronyms, is an important tool in the new rights protection mechanisms for new GTLDs. Many people have worked hard to get us where we are with respect to these new tools and URS. We formed, many of you know, the Implementation Recommendation Team, a team of 19 globally diverse intellectual property experts, and their work was confirmed and modified by the Special Trademarks Issues Team, a cross-community or cross-constituency team, comprised mainly of GNSO and ALAC members that worked hard to finalize a set of trademark protections for new GTLDs. And in addition, the GAC and the board worked over the last several months leading up to the approval of the program and actually enhanced many of the trademark protections. And so this seminar is to take us through the steps we need to implement and launch the URS, the Uniform Rapid Suspension process. And while it seems like there's a way to go before we're ready to implement, I think we are close. We have the two most important ingredients. We have providers that are available, able, and willing to provide the service that are very well qualified. We have people, you people on the phone and others that are very passionate about getting this done and creating this product that's going to make the DNS another place. So the purpose of this seminar is to move us down the road to get us closer to implementation. And, you know, first we have to identify where we are. And I think we've done that. You know, currently we believe we have a model that does not meet the cost targets that were set out for URS. That is, you know, about $500 in fees for instance, but this doesn't mean that the URS doesn't do the things it's supposed to do, you know, or we don't have in place the other parts of URS. We have a procedure in place that's fully baked and a path towards implementation. So while we're continuing to do other things to verify where we are with respect to cost, so many of you know ICANN recently released a request for information from firms that might participate in providing URS services to get more information about the cost position of the program and the cost impacts. While we're waiting for the results of that RFI to come in, I think we should continue to work on the process to determine if there are ways to take cost out so we can hit those cost targets. But while we do that, we also have to work very hard to make sure that the registrant protections that were put in place in the current URS are retained. So a lot of the work really went to fashioning a takedown process that also provided protection for registrants, and I think that balancing by the community was really well done. It's kind of one of the hallmarks of the ICANN model. So once we've identified this cost problem, we've received several good suggestions already. What we want to do in this meeting is flesh out some of those suggestions, see if they're viable, what steps we can take to make them harder recommendations, to weigh them and ensure they will help reduce cost and what can be put in place at the same time to protect registrants. While we're talking about these potential recommendations, we had a little technical problem. Somebody's advancing the slides, so we don't know who. But I'm just going to get to the end of my introduction. So I think the goal is to flesh out some of these ideas today that Olaf is going to take us through. And while we're doing that, we want to have in the back of our mind how we would, from suggestions to something that's implementable. And how do we do that at ICANN? We have the imprimatur of of a community discussion, and so how do we we want to look forward to some solution that we've used in the past that served us really well. So, for example, we formed the IRT and we formed the STI, and they did a fantastic amount of work in a short period of time. I think this is a taken on by a small is really important, cross-community set of people that make certain recommendations to the broader community. So, that's just one way of going about that. But what we want to do is take these recommendations, get them hard on paper. I know that in the Toronto meeting, some parties will be coming to the URS session with fleshed out models that either build on what you see here or something new, I don't know. But as we get towards the end of this, let's start thinking about, who could participate in a smaller group that might hammer through some of these solutions and make recommendations of us as a whole for consideration. So that... I want to turn this over to Olaf Nordling from our Brussels office, more or less the heart and soul of this effort. He's agreed to take it on, and we're grateful for that. So, Olaf, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, and good morning to you, Kurt, and good morning and good afternoon and good very late afternoon or something to all of you, and thanks for joining in to this webinar, which has a little agenda, which you can see on the screen. Just to give a brief background to add to what Kurt has said, and also to bring up some recent initiatives taken, notably Kurt has already mentioned, so we can be brief on those, the issuance of the RFI and what we're doing now, community engagement. And then the core of the matter would really be a discussion, and we want that to be interactive to the extent possible of the community suggestions that we received in Prague. And we've grouped them in four areas, focus areas. One is to limit panel involvement, also one suggested area, to automate the system and simplify it. Another, to provide financing and support to meet the cost target, and finally, appeal to Ombudsman. Following that, just a brief mentioning of upcoming events, and if we've got time for a more general question and answer sessions, we're going to do that as well. So let's go straight to the next one, which is a little bit of the background, and I think I can be very brief here since Kurt has given such an excellent introduction to it. It was created by the community, and you may remember acronyms like IRT and STIRT as being the community groupings that really put this forward and developed it. And it should be a complement to the UDRP, not a substitute for it. In order to resolve very obvious cases of trademark infringement, through, in this case, suspension of the domain name. Nothing else. It's intended to be fast and inexpensive, and a cost target of $500 has been, the leading light in that respect. And it should be compulsory for all new GJLDs, and that's part of the applicant's guidebook, as you probably all know. Now, as Kurt also mentioned, it's unclear if these fee and also the timing objectives to some degree can be met with the procedure as it's currently drafted. And to that, to seek suggestions how to resolve any such problems, there was a session in June at the ICANN Prague meeting where such suggestions were gathered. And as of recently, you may be aware that we have developed engagement with potential URS providers, primarily through the issuance of a request for information on the 24th of September this year. And this is intended for information gathering and see where we actually stand and what the service providers in this respect think about the system, and to provide information to the further development here. And of course, it may be followed by a more formal or request for proposals, an RFP. We also engaged the community, trying to invite, invited the GNSO Council and the ALAC leadership to get process advice, because this is, of course, quite crucial, since it was the original development was done very much under their auspices. We want to be clear that this should have the same kind of community backing. This was fairly recently. We got positive first reactions saying that it's good that you do it, and we await further decisions and advice in that regard. We also summarized the suggestions we received at the Prague session, compiled them, and to some degree analyzed them, and they're available, actually posted in conjunction with the upcoming Toronto meeting, the URS session, which we will have on the 18th of October. Now, for the community suggestions, we grouped them in four focus areas. A, to limit panel involvement, since that was identified, the panel, or rather the cost for the panelists, has been identified as a main cost driver in the system. So possibilities to limit the panel involvement could alleviate cost concerns and fee concerns. Another area was to automate and simplify, and there are various suggestions to that effect. Third one, to provide supplementary financing or supplementary support in order to facilitate the meeting of our objectives. And last but not least, an interesting suggestion regarding appeal mechanisms. So we'll go through those in order and stop after each focus area for comments. Just a brief introduction to the first area, to limit the panel involvement. First suggestion, we can refer to it in our further discussions to suggestion one here, that in clear-cut cases where there is no response from the registrant after a complaint has been filed, the complainant could be deemed to have prevailed without the need for a formal panel decision. So the decision would be taken by a case handler with a service provider, and that would reduce the costs for involving the panelists. And that may call for additional registrant protection, since this is deviates from the letter of the URS as it stands. And second proposal, this is, since there was the whole objective of the URS is to deal with and take care of obvious cases of infringement. There was the idea to set an upper time limit for panel involvement. If the case cannot be cannot be judged by a panelist within a fraction of an hour, to be further defined in conjunction with panelists experienced in those matters, the panel should quite simply reject a case as not being a clear-cut case. And of course, that reduces timeline. Well, it reduces the time that the panel is involved and thereby the cost. Whether that calls for added registrant protection is also a question. But one thing should, of course, be made clear, that a subsequent UDRP would always be a possibility. So with that rather short introduction, and I'm sure I don't make the proposals justice, could we open the floor for comments and questions around these? But in particular, whether you there are people in favor of one or the other solution under this, or find them totally out of the question. That's that kind of information that we need.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions or comments at this time, you may press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone.
Or you can enter your questions or comments through the chat box as well. And that's open at all hours, I believe.
Thank you. We do have a question on the line or a comment from Christina Rosette. Please go ahead.
Hi, Olaf. It's Christina. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Christina. Good to hear from you. Thanks for joining us.
I have a question. You know, when I was a member of the much maligned IRT, and number two was really kind of the whole point of the IRT, as proposal for URS. So I guess my question is ICANN proposing that they would actually quantify what constitutes the limited time of deliberation, and if the panel exceeded that, then it would default, for lack of a better word, I realize that's a loaded word here, but that in the event the panelist exceeded that amount of time, then the decision would be that the URS complaint was denied?
I think that, well, it's not ICANN in the sense of ICANN staff that is proposing this, but this is ICANN in the sense of community members that brought this up in Prague. And, well, it can be expressed otherwise to say that, all right, you have, this amount of time equivalent to this kind of fee in order to settle the issue. If it's not settled, well, please default that it is not an obvious case. That's my little, perhaps amateurish interpretation. But mind you, these are proposals that come from the community session in Prague. So it's
okay.
By no means ICANN staff that are proposing it.
Okay. I would just note the concern that I would have that if there were to be a quantified time limit, that would be very subject to gaming and I think, frankly, defeat the whole purpose of having a URS.
Meaning, if I understand you right, when you talk about gaming, that there would be defaulting into non-obvious cases in most cases, and rather awaiting a UDRP. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think it very much depends on who the URS providers are, because if a URS provider is also a UDRP provider, then there's a built-in incentive, frankly, for the panelist in the URS to say, oh, this is going to take me too long to decide. It's going to have to be a UDRP. And then, you know, there's a possibility that that same provider could then hear it as a UDRP where there's a potential for a greater fee. I just think that it would be possible to kind of manipulate what constitutes the limited time. I think if you're I just am very leery of saying if it's more than 15 minutes, then it doesn't count. Or if it's more than 20 minutes, it doesn't count. I just think there, if that's the route that's taken, there will have to be some built-in safeguards against that type of manipulation.
Thank you for that comment. And indeed, we had identified that particular concern in the paper which we posted for the Prague meeting. Do you see ways of alleviating that concern? Other than structural separation or something like that?
That is one. I think that's probably something I'd like to think a little bit more about and let other folks ask questions and perhaps circle back with you later.
Okay. Thank you very much, Christina.
We have another question from Alan Greenberg with ICANN. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I have two questions, actually. The first one, and it's related to one of the comments that has been made in the chat list. Number one says, in clear-cut cases, there shall be no the panel does not need to get involved. Who's making the decision on clear-cut if it's not indeed the panel? So that almost sounds like it's number two, but the opposite, that is the panel gets involved but decides it's so clear-cut they can adjourn after 12 minutes. So that's my first question, is who makes the clear-cut decision if the panel isn't involved?
Could I respond very quickly to that? I think it's perhaps not well phrased in my slide here. But when there is no response, well, in absence of a response from the registrant, so that would be the case and it would be deemed, the absence of a response would be deemed to, and of course, how clear-cut is it then? Is it just the absence of the response that would count? And of course, in that case, the idea, as we've understood it, would be that the case handler at the URS provider would take the decision.
Okay. In my belief, and I was part of the STI, clear-cut and no response is not synonymous. You can have a very, very clear-cut case that the respondent, that the registrant is using the name fairly, but doesn't respond for some reason or other. So I think you need to separate those. And if what you meant was no response, then that doesn't imply clear-cut, then the statement should be changed very, very much so. My second question, however, is both of these things talk about the panel. The FDI recommended that the URS be held by carried out by a single examiner. When did it become a panel?
I think it's shorthand for a single examiner. I think so. We used the expression panel for.
Some of the comments I've heard saying a panel of three is very expensive, and if we're talking about one examiner, let's say the examiner, not the panel, because people read something into these words. And I think one of the problems, and I'll raise this again later, with the initial cut that ICANN got from the dispute providers is there are some misunderstandings in what this is really about, or perhaps they got changed in the various versions of the applicant guidebook. Thank you.
Right, Alan, this is Kurt. Thanks for your questions.
Yep.
First, when we think of panel, we think of one person. So if we think of a panelist, and maybe that could be more clear. So that was a very good point. And so, too, was your point about every unanswered complaint is not a clear-cut case and vice versa. But we think, you know, listening to those who know the data and information, that in the vast majority of cases, that's the way. So I think what we're trying to explore in this version of a model is to take advantage of the vast majority of cases that aren't answered, that are clear-cut, which is most of them, and then so we can take advantage of cost efficiencies for those and then provide some protections for the exceptions that are not, rather than burden the whole only use a very few. So I think that's what this solution is.
Kurt, Kurt, a quick response. I support that, but those of us who are fighting for the registrants' rights on the in the STI discussions and follow-on discussions gave a lot of ground in a relatively short and tight response time. There will be cases where that response time is too short because, in a simple case, someone's on vacation or something like that. You cannot take no response with synonymous. I understand the large majority of people who are doing nasty things may not come and say, here I am, I'm going to take my punishment. But you can't make them synonymous. Thank you.
Right, and certainly we agree. And that's why we need to flesh out this conversation more. Maybe if somebody responds late, you know, they not only get the name back, but then their URS proof or something like that, you have to go to UDRP if you still think you have a case or there's some, you know, at any indicia of complexity, you go right to UDRP. Those are just suggestions we came up in talking, we talk about it for hours, but, in our discussions here, but I think, a discussion might be able to flesh out a solution that provides protections to registrants because we understand that issue fully and that's why we're all talking here and want to continue the discussion.
At this time, we have no further questions or comments on the phone lines.
Okay. I think there are questions in the chat room, and I don't know if any of my colleagues could follow up on those, if there are any. Just give it a little brief minute before we advance to the next focus area. Oh, here we go. But I need help from my colleagues here, but eyesight is failing. So. Of course, we will collect all the questions and comments in the chat room and give them due attention and respond offline if need be. Okay.
Wait, just kidding. Well, hang on a second, Olaf.
Yes.
Okay, Olaf, Philip Coleman,
yep.
Making URS model changes based on price considerations before pricing has been market tested via RFI responses seems like putting cart before the horse. If I can proactively making expert arbitration providers beyond existing ranks of UDRP providers aware of RFI to encourage broadest possible range of responses.
Well, what we're trying to do here is a dual-track approach. I mean, we have the RFI, and in parallel, we're looking at the various suggestions that may or may not perhaps be necessary. But we have strong indications that some changes will be necessary. So, hence this attempt to work on two fronts at the same time. It was the second part to that question as well. Could you repeat that?
The second part of this question looks like, is ICANN proactively making expert arbitration providers beyond existing ranks of UDRP providers aware of RFI to encourage the broadest possible range of responses?
We will. We try. And so to give it as much, to spread the word. And that said, It's not like we have a massive marketing plan for bringing out the RFI. Is there any more questions?
Okay, yeah. I have a. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing the name correctly. I have a question from Elaine Pruis. It's, how about letting the registry operator decide if it is a clear-cut violation of the registry policy? If the complainant doesn't like it, doesn't like the decision, then go to UDOP.
It's thanks, noted. Interesting comment. Kind of comment we look forward to. So thanks, Elaine.
Philip Shepherd submits, if there is a conflict of interest in existing UDRP providers providing URS, should they be excluded from an RFP?
Okay. Also, thanks for that comment. Well noted. As you know, we register it all. So we are recording of all the proceedings and the chat. So, yeah. Do you have any more? I think we need to soon advance to the next focus area. Okay. Well,
this is an area rich with questions. There's pages, we printed out pages and pages from the chat room. Suggestions, for example, from J. Scott Evans about making appeals no cost to registrants and arriving at definitions of clear cut and deep concerns about the automatic default scenario and how that might harm registrants. So this is there's a suggestion from Elaine about the registry operator decide if it's a clear cut violation of registry policy, which could be good, but could be peril. So this is an area that's inspired quite a bit of conversation. And I think, when we conclude, let's think especially about this one. It's first of all, it's a really interesting topic. And second of all, I think it provides some road to solution. So we want to think about convening a team to discuss this in sort of a working session to, put ideas on the table and then, crush those ideas with concern and see what's left and see what solutions might be available where safeguards could be implemented close behind in order to get some of the cost out of the process, such as the cost of the appeal or cost of adjudication in some cases, or putting a definition around what's clear cut, so we can put a clear definition around what the costs are, and developing some potential solutions. So I don't know exactly how to have this conversation in this room, but
at least we've got a start, and a lot more ideas into this repository of suggestions, which is precisely what we aim for. I mean, we've not there to be able to conclude very much in that respect today, but to advance the matters and get the input. So thanks very much for the input so far on this, and it will be carefully studied. And let's advance to B now, which is, perhaps an obvious way to reduce both timeline and cost, and that's to automate and or simplify the process. And four different tracks here that were mentioned in Prague, to use web interfaces and email for as many steps as possible, perhaps all, and reduce the number of case handler interventions to reduce, both the timeline and the additional costs for the parallel notifications, for example, things like that. But of course, that's fraught with some dangers as well when it comes to both complainant and the registrant, potentially. The second is to limit the scope of the URS to accept only complaints related to trademarks recorded in the Trademark Clearinghouse. And this may be, facilitate the verification of the claim considerably, and also would potentially open up for perhaps a tiered fee structure that the $500 would apply to those who have their trademarks in the clearinghouse and use that in the URS. Third one is to check only for identity between the trademark and the domain name and not for confusing similarity. And, of course, that would facilitate the similarity assessment between the trademark and the domain name string. But at the same time, that reduces the scope of the URS to only identities and facilitates for intentional infringement by really very, very small modifications of a trademark and to be launched as a domain name. And fourth, to copy suitable cost savings approaches from other existing procedures of a similar nature. And three such procedures were mentioned in Prague. That was the CAC automated procedure, and it was the nominate system, and also the a system that's operating for .XXX and developed by ICM. And of course, there are examples to be copied from, hopefully not by infringing in any intellectual property right in those cases. But of course, that needs to be checked that they would be suitable for the global scope of the URS as well. So there are potential here to reduce both timeline and costs. Some of those may impair or the registrant notification may be delayed or not received in time. And there could be, at least for option two here, a tiered fee structure that could be connected to using the Trademark Clearinghouse, especially since there was reasoning about using the Trademark Clearinghouse already during the development of the URS. And it has the risk, one of them, for if we only go for identity to facilitate intentional infringement, which is, of course, a bad thing. And, well, all in all requires analysis of the existing procedures if we get inspired by those to see that they really are fit for the global purpose of the URS. So those are the four proposals. Very, very briefly, that were received in Prague on this focus area. So I open the floor for comments to those.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, on the phone lines, if you have a question, you may press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. We do have a question on the line from Alan Greenberg with ICANN. Please go ahead.
Thank you. One comment and or maybe two comments. On the first, I was surprised at number one because I presumed that was one of the givens. The STI specify keep things as simple as possible, keep them short, and I think we explicitly mentioned email. So I was surprised that was one of the ways to modify it. I sort of thought it was there to begin with. Number two, I could certainly support presuming it doesn't change the overall timeline significantly. That is, you don't have to spend 4 weeks with registering with the trademark clearinghouse before you can do a URS. For trademarks that are around at the time that the TLD launches, they may be there, but it's not at all clear that ones created afterwards will automatically go to the trademark clearinghouse unless ICANN is in a mode where we are actually launching TLDs on a regular basis, which may or may not be the case. So I don't think that's number two is unreasonable, assuming it can be done within reasonable timelines and, of course, reasonable prices. Thank you.
Quick response. First of all, as to number one, well, yes, web interfaces and email, but they are not the only ones. There are even requirements to provide hard copy to the registrants. So it's rather reducing the multiple ways of notifying the registrant that is implied by one. And on two, well, the idea would be that the complainant would corroborate his complaint and by an excerpt from the trademark clearinghouse. So that would be easy to verify for the URS service provider.
Yeah, but Olaf, that part was already in the original specs because one of the trademark clearinghouse specifications was it could be used as pre-clearance for the URS. But the question is now, if it's mandatory, you have to have a way of wrapping that into the URS procedure when the problem occurs.
Indeed. Okay. Thank you for comment.
At this time, we have no further questions or comments on the phone lines.
I see a few, with my weak eyesight, a few comments in the chat box. I think it's from Jeff Newman, if I manage to read it before it disappears. Just as many do not believe we should eliminate the sanity check, as that is policy, we should not limit the scope of the URS to identical marks, as that is policy too. Let's be consistent. So, very clear comment. Thanks for that.
Hello.
And I also ask my dear colleagues to help me out here because I'm not capable of managing reading the chat room very well, especially as it keeps scrolling and many comments flew in during the presentation.
So one is. And I think we touched on this, but I just want to point it up. You know, it's from Elaine that says, I would feel better about tying URS to the trademark clearinghouse if the trademark clearinghouse is done according to the alternate model proposed. And so if we use trademarks that are registered in the clearinghouse, that takes the validation portion of the URS inquiry out of it. And we could have, I don't know if this makes any sense or not, maybe it doesn't, but, you know, a two-price scale, right, for trademarks in the clearinghouse, there's one low price, and for trademarks not in the clearinghouse that have to be validated, there's a validation fee on top of the adjudication fee, and the that would knock down the adjudication. We wouldn't have to spread out the validations across all the fees. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, or that's already in the contemplation of the URS already or not. I know we talked about using trademark clearinghouse at one time, but we didn't know how this whole thing would play out. But now it seems to me fairly certain that we could use the clearinghouse as the validation step for URS.
All right. And, there are various ways of doing that. But, of course, the easiest way would be that the complainant provides the excerpt directly from the trademark clearinghouse in some kind of fashion. I suppose we've already mentioned that with a question mark, of course, that the tiered fee structure, which is really, one lower one for a trademark, those providing verification from the Trademark Clearinghouse and a higher sort of verification fee than for others. So question is whether that's acceptable to all and a good way to go.
There's a question on the phone.
Yes.
We have a question on the line from Christina Rosette with Conviction. Please go ahead.
I guess I do have Conviction, but it's Covington. I went ahead and put it in the comments and feedback to just keep things moving along, but thank you.
Okay, thanks. And I see that Jeff Newman in the chat room has already advanced to topic C. So why don't we do that?
Well, wait a second.
All right, I wait a second.
Hi, Olaf. This is Trang. I'm going to read some questions that were submitted in the chat room. The first is from Nick. Is it true that when a mark is registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse, then it's a clear-cut case?
Well, I'm not really competent to answer to that, but I would say my assumption would be no. It's clear. That the trademark is the trademark which is in question. Whether there is an infringement, meaning that the identity or confusing similarity, whether that is the clear-cut case, and that's what is meant with the mentioning or the use of the phrase, well, that is not obvious just by the trademark being verified by the Trademark Clearinghouse. I hope that answers that one.
The next question is from, I apologize if I don't pronounce his name correctly, Gideon. On the automation for the use of interfaces and email, should there be the problems that were experienced, like the task? How does ICANN plan to deal with it?
Well, I would make it easy for me in those cases, dodge the question and say that this is not where ICANN is in the receiving end of anything or in the sending end of anything, but it's a matter of the complainant, the registrant, and the URS service provider. So it would rather be a matter of an SLA for the URS service provider in that case.
The next one is a comment from Christina Rosette. Support number one, don't support restricting URS to marks in clearinghouse, but do support tier fee structure where mark is in trademark clearinghouse already. Strongly oppose number three, support number four in theory, but need to make sure that those cost savings approaches actually save costs. Thanks, Christina, for that.
Thank you.
The next one is from Christine Doreen and is directed at you, Kurt. She said, the current URS says that complainants can prove use by submitting use validation from the Trademark Clearinghouse. Doesn't mention a direct connection.
Which I take as a comment that this is to some degree already in place, yeah.
Thanks, Christine. That's the last of the questions or comments that I have in the comments and feedback forum or pod.
Okay, thank you very much. So very briefly and crudely conclude, well, one seems to have quite some support. Two, also quite some support. Three is more dubious. And four, yes, proven valid and useful in the context. Let's advance to area C, and here we go. And Jeff, you were going to love this because you just wrote it in the chat box. Keep the URS as is. Find external partial financing of service providers URS steps to achieve low URS fees and review the URS as foreseen 18 months from launch. Which, well, it doesn't say here explicitly, but it could be assumed by some that this external partial financing should come from ICANN. And it can be addressed in very many ways and discussed in very many ways. Of course, and it's a way not to address the costs per se, but to address the fees. At the same time, it has a number of pitfalls in it. I mean, we don't have a good idea about the actual cost that should be subsidized, and we don't have the volumes, the extent of such complaints that would be filed during the first 18 months. And of course, a subsidized model has also always the drawback of not being generally sustainable. So it's a little bit a question of the long-term viability. And of course, in order to go into some kind of subsidy program, well, the economists should be, or some kind of cost reductions should be sought, or at least there should be incentives for keeping the costs low. So there are many comments that can be made about this one, and it's perhaps an option of last resort in that regard. The second is, interestingly enough, to seek volunteer panelists willing to work on URS cases for free until the URS is reviewed, which would indeed both reduce the costs and the fees, but with any such approach, of course, the URS cases that occur will have to be properly handled, and we cannot just take in any volunteers. They need to be properly qualified for really that, making that kind of adjudication. So we can reduce the costs, and with that one, we can reduce the fees with both of them. The timeline would not necessarily change at all. And, well, it gives us, of course, a leeway to find some kind of cost reductions over time and to when it all is reviewed. But there are no incentives to reduce costs necessarily in a subsidized model. And the costs are unknown and long-term, not really sustainable, not the kind of solution you wish to have. And qualified volunteers, yeah, well, that would be great, but they have to be qualified. So this focus area, do it by financing or support in various ways, and find ways of alleviating the cost concerns primarily. Are there any comments or questions regarding that?
We do have a comment or question from Alan Greenberg with ICANN. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Olaf, I think there's an exceedingly strong justification for ICANN subsidizing this process if in fact a wide range of dispute providers say they can't do it for the price. The letter that the board sent to the GNSO, which initiated the SGI, was sent in nine days. It'll be 3 years ago. The SGI came out with its report in 3 years minus 2 months. ICANN has been sitting on this for 3 years, and now at the very last moment, we're talking about making radical changes to a policy that was hammered out by a group that I think was the most, the best example I've ever seen of people with radically different opinions coming in and compromising. If ICANN had done a lot of this a lot earlier, we might have found someone who could do it at the price that was suggested, or we might have gone through a more rational process to change the policy if that indeed is needed. I think at this late date, if it really can't be done for this price, and I'm not 100% sure there aren't other people around other than our regular dispute processors who might be able to handle this, but if it really can't be done, then I think ICANN has to subsidize part of it based on its lack of action over close to 3 years and trying to address this at the very last moment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Alan, for the comment. Well noted.
Alan, this is Kurt. Your comment is well taken, although I think we need to bifurcate the issues of timing and whether a subsidy model works. And so there's a couple of things we should think about in a subsidy model. One is we hope this mechanism is much more widely used than UDRP, that there'd still be the same number of UDRP cases, but many more URS cases because it's cheaper. And if so, you know, what do those subsidized costs be? They're at this stage of the game very speculative, and setting that money aside is difficult. Second, there's a perception that there's, you know, $300 odd million in the bank, and so a large portion of that could be dedicated to this purpose. I'm not so sure that's the case, but in any case, in trying to develop a subsidy model, you can do it in two ways, right? You can do it over the long term, which would mean the subsidy has to come from somewhere, and ignoring this very short-term pulse of cash that's passing through ICANN, if we made it a long-term subsidy, that money has to come from somewhere, with ICANN being a zero-sum nonprofit game. And so, you know, what we'd be doing is spreading out the costs of URS across all registrants. And it might be, you know, there might be calculations done that show that cost spread out over all registrants is minuscule, and so that's a possibility. Another way to develop a
Kurt, just for clarity, I was not talking about long term. I'm talking about a short term policy until we get some experience with the real cost and until we have time to look at this in a rational and real, you know, ICANN model, as opposed to something on the back of an envelope quickly. So
right.
I certainly didn't mean a long-term subsidy. I meant something to get us to the point where we could make some rational decisions based on real information. Thank you.
Great. And that's exactly what I was getting to next, was if it's a short-term subsidy, then we'll get some information, but there's likelihood that we'll have to, get cost out of it somehow. And so I think that work should start right away. And I'm not advocating doing work, you know, in an emergency mode, but I am suggesting we do the work with alacrity, with the types of people involved. I think, you know, regardless of timing, what we have a situation where we have a procedure that's pretty similar to UDRP, and in some instances even has some more protections than UDRP, and is supposed to apply to rapid cases. So I think it's perfectly natural to take some very good work that was done. And I was sitting there too, so I know how hard all the volunteers were working. And now that we see where we are, we have to do some more work. So you know, I'm a bigger fan than anybody of all the work that's been done on this, and I have as much of a stake as anybody in making sure that we reach our goals. So I think that some math should be done around subsidization, but I think that subsidization is sort of the last option that's implemented to fill in the gaps where either we're not done yet, so we need more time to do more work, as you say, or we've implemented cost reductions and it gets us partway to our goal, but not all of the way, and we want to get all the way to the goal, and then some of those costs can be spread out in some other way. So I think if one group of people is working on how to streamline the process some more with reducing substantive reviews or kicking it over to UDRP faster if it's not clear-cut, and then there's another group that, aided by, some financial types, that does the arithmetic around subsidization and determines what that means.
Yeah. Kirk, just to be clear, I don't disagree with anything of what you said, presuming that the option of subsidies, short-term subsidies, come before radically changing the policy just because the cost is too high. The policy was a hard one to work to whack out. Thank you.
Next question or comment on the line comes from Don Nebbed with Donuts. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Kurt, a couple points. One, I think we should not refer to this as a subsidy. Essentially, and it certainly shouldn't be referred to as a subsidy of the trademark holders. When we worked on the IRT and the STI, we agreed as a group to have a certain level of protections and a framework of protections in that compromise. And that's what we're really subsidizing are those protections. So, you know, maybe we call it an underwriting. I think someone mentioned that at a recent meeting. And we underwrite those protections for the 18-month period that we're talking about here. And it doesn't have to be unlimited. As part of the RFP, you could say, how much would it cost to provide these protections, be it, a sanity check that we're talking about here? And the providers that are replying to the RFP should be able to take that risk for an upfront payment of whatever, X dollars, X hundreds of thousands of dollars. They will provide, a panelist or to provide a sanity check, and they do it upfront. And there's no extra risk to ICANN because, you know, if there are more than expected, there's some risk for the RFP panelists and the provider, and it's not to the ICANN or the community. Obviously, there's enough money to warrant this kind of underwriting of this kind of protections that we all agreed on. So to your point of having two working groups, I don't think we need two working groups. We only need one. And the one is to how to finance the protections that we all agreed upon as a community and voted on and approved, and I believe unanimously, and how do we get that done efficiently and effectively in a short-term basis while we review the ongoing, URS and make whatever changes at that point. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Olaf here. Thank you very much for that. It seems that there are different ways to skin a cat, so to speak. So various ways of whether we call it subsidy or underwriting, but at any rate, it's providing money to the process, financing it in some way, either upfront or on a case-by-case basis. And the idea to do it upfront with particular conditions is to be taken into account when we look further on this. Any more comments?
We have no more questions or comments here on the phone lines.
Okay, let's advance to focus area D, which is one particular proposal, which was to introduce the possibility for registrants to appeal a URS outcome to an ombudsman. And as a Swede, of course, I like the word ombudsman, but it should be noted that this is rather a complementary proposal in case there is additional protection needed in following some other modifications, perhaps in the procedure. It wouldn't reduce cost or timeline, and of course it provides an alternative to the existing appeals mechanism, because that's already foreseen that there would be an appeal to the URS provider possible. So a potential complement for additional registrant protection. And of course, it's a matter of this should be financed as well, one way or another. So there are more sub-questions to this, perhaps. With that, I just open it for further comments and perhaps for clarifications from those who understand the original intention better than I do.
We have a question on the line or a comment from Alan Greenberg with ICANN. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. It's not really addressing the words on the screen, but there's a background thought. In what I saw of the feedback from the existing dispute providers was there were aspects of the URS which would make it very costly, such as the three-person panel for appeals. I don't know about the rest of the people in the group when this was developed, but my perception was appeal was something that would likely be used very, very infrequently and not be something which was going to show up in a large number of the cases. So I would really like to understand the assumptions that either ICANN gave to the providers or the assumptions the providers made on things like how often would an appeal happen, to understand whether there is really something broken in the policy. And if 90% of people of the URSs are appealed, there is something broken in my mind, or if we have some assumptions that are wrong. And without that kind of understanding, it's very hard to judge whether indeed, you know, how much we need to change. Thank you.
Olaf here to quickly respond. I mean, it's clear that it's already foreseen an appeals procedure in the URS system. And it's also clear that that is subject to an appeals fee of unspecified latitude. So, there is not much in terms of assumptions there. It's just that, okay, there is an appeals mechanism available, and that would be for a fee. So whether this is, and I saw a question fluttering by at the chat box as well, whether this is to be seen as complementary or as a substitute, I guess both ideas are possible. I'm not sure we understood that clearly from the Prague session. So. Hence my ask for help to those who came up with the idea, and I cannot recall who they were, to perhaps develop this a little bit further, whether it would be a useful complement or substitute something which will presumably be too costly with something that is less costly through an ombudsman.
Olaf, thank you for reminding me that there was a fee associated with appeal. That just reinforces my argument that was not a strong argument for why the URS could not be provided for the fee specified. So I think there are some assumptions that are being made along the way.
That is separate. It's separate from that. It doesn't address the timeline or the fee. Well, the 500 target fee. What it may do, perhaps provide some additional registrant protection. I think that was the intention of the proposal.
I wasn't commenting on the proposal. I was commenting on the argument that had been made by dispute providers. I said it wasn't quite addressing the number one on the screen, that the appeal process was what one of the things that made $500 insufficient. And I was questioning that style, that logic. Thank you.
I think that's a misunderstanding. I mean, we're talking about $500 for the fee for the process, and it doesn't include the appeals fee.
Mm-hmm.
Any more questions or comments on this?
At this time, we have no further questions or comments on the phone lines.
Okay. Then we could advance to the final part of this little webinar. And this is a little bit of advertising about upcoming events, and in particular, the first will be the ICANN meeting in Toronto, where we have a workshop on Thursday, 18th October, starting at 12:45 and running till 1 a.m. And we'll hopefully be able to advance this matter also with the help of some input from the potential URS service providers, and have their views as one of the basis for discussion. And we're these days looking into how to build the agenda further. So inviting proposals for topics and speakers. It is a comparatively short session, and the objective of that one would be to review specific solutions and identify preferences and discuss the further analysis and development work needed. And well, what we need to have is a working approach to achieve consensus on a solution, or consensus on multiple solutions, whether we have a sort of ideal scenario and a fallback scenario, perhaps. But that's the general thrust of the Toronto meeting. And so, please contact me on such matters, and also, if we may, ask the community of assistance to spread the word about both this upcoming event and the other initiatives that have been taken recently, like the RFI, so that people are aware of it. It would be very, very much appreciated. So, with that, could we perhaps... We've got 10 minutes left for more general questions and answers.
Yeah, Olaf, this is Kurt. So there's one question about whether ICANN plans to contract with the UDRP providers, and I'd like to hear people on the phone who are passionate about that one way or the other. Our analysis to date indicates that arrangements with URS providers, rather, that are similar than the ones we have with UDRP providers, and I think I screwed up my acronym somewhere along there, but would be an adequate arrangement. We think ICANN has remedies against current UDRP providers if UDRP providers, you know, abuse registrants or don't meet their obligations under their, what is it, Amy? Is it a certification or a accreditation?
Right. There's a process by which the UDRP providers provide a proposal that they will comply with all the requirements that are listed, and the proposal needs to meet those requirements, and then they become an authorized UDRP provider, an approved UDRP provider.
Thanks. So
But we'd be interested in, so our initial pass would be in that direction, but we have several experts in this area on the phone, and be pleased to hear whatever arguments there are for making a contract, so we can consider those and have a public discussion about that. So if there are any comments about that, we'll take them.
We have a question or a comment on the line from Kathy Kleinman with FHH. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I on? Kurt, I'm sorry, I've been waiting for a while. Can I respond to something earlier?
No, Kathy, sorry.
Sorry. I actually just posted it, but there's been such an extensive discussion about the examiner that I just thought that I'd post that, you know, all default cases, you know, according to the rules, go to examination for review on the merits of the claim, and there doesn't seem to be any differentiation as to who they go in front of. So it would seem to be, you know, we intended on the SCI for this to go in front of an examiner, which one assumes is somebody with a legal background in the area. So I wanted to just cite some black letter law or rules in the applicant guidebook. So thank you, and
yeah,
Thank you for this session.
And thank you, Kathy, for that comment, which sort of, it's one of the earlier focus areas, of course, on A1, that typically, yes, indeed, according to the letter of the URS, all cases should go before the examiner and should not be defaulted by a case handler. So it is a change, or it would be a change if it was agreeable in cases of, well, clear-cut cases, whatever they are, how we manage to, or you manage to define them, and in absence of a response from the domain name holder. So it goes back to one of the first proposals we addressed today. Thanks, Kathy. Other comments and ideas on how best to advance the work would be very welcome indeed. Process matters. Should we constitute a suitably balanced drafting group to do this, that, and the other? Or should there be many groups? Or should this be conducted in some particular way? Any proposal on that would be very welcome now when we've got 8 more minutes. And, of course, any other comments as well.
So, I think there's a couple of questions on the line that are kind of around what you're asking, Olaf, and a couple other questions too. So I notice you know, Philip disagrees and stated the STI disagrees about the issue with the contract. So I think a group of, you know, we should have a discussion about that, because we definitely want to lay out the pluses and minuses with regard to having an agreement. The issue of convening a team, you know, I think is a good one. I'm not sure how to do the dance. So that, you know, convening working groups is largely the province of the GNSO or ALAC, or the effort by GNSO and ALAC has been done before, and Olaf's been careful to write to the chairs of the SOs and ACs that would be interested in this to get their take on how to manage this going forward. So we want to do whatever we're going to do in a collaborative style that has the backing of our policy-making bodies. So I think part of that is going forward. There's also a question about whether the record established here will be shown to those that might respond to the request for statement of interest. And I think that's an excellent point. You know, we've captured all the, I personally pasted all these comments into a Word document, but I'm sure all these comments are captured, and we want to distill them down in a way that would be helpful to our analysis of RFI respondents and also be helpful to potential RFI respondents in considering how to respond. So we will do that, and we will use that distillation and to send out to the group of people that participated here today with the idea that I think that, we're hovering around a couple avenues to explore with regard to, how the process can be implemented. I think we talked about using the Trademark Clearinghouse to take off some of the validation costs. We talked about taking appeal and putting it somewhere else so it was clearly not included in, spread across the cost of maintaining an appeal mechanism was not spread across the cost of the UDRP claims. We definitely ascertain that there's one panelist. If we could, there are a lot of questions about what constitutes a clear-cut case of abuse, and I wonder if, there are indicia of that. I have a sense that trademark holders and their representatives look at cases of abuse, and in the first 5 seconds of looking at it, they know already that this is either by the person behind it, or the kind of name, or the group, or the number of registrations, or there's some indication that whether this is a clear cut case or not. And I wonder if taking the experience of those people that do this every day, we couldn't write criteria that say, boy, I looked at this and I know it's clear cut. And, at least get a large number of the cases of abuse into a cheaper URS with lighter procedures, but some more procedural protections for registrants or something like that. Maybe, take less cases in, but have indicia that they really are clear cut going in. So I think there's some opportunities around there. Certainly agree with Alan that we should not act in haste. I agree that I'm sure all the trademark holders that URS needs to be implemented on time. And so we will develop timelines that manage both those situations. And we will hopefully work with some others here on proving up or disproving the viability of subsidy.
Kurt, thanks for making some very useful conclusions here. I noticed that Philip Shepherd says that it's not a matter whether it's clear-cut, it's when it's not clear-cut that is, the key aspect in this, which is, of course, a very valid point. I would also like to, I think there was an earlier a question early on in the chat box whether the slides are available or will be available. And, yes, they will be available. And I'm not sure exactly where and when and how, but they will most certainly be available. And so will, of course, the recording also from this session. Just to respond to that.
Hey, Olaf, I have one more comment I want to respond to. It's been made several times about that ICANN should cast a wider net than the existing providers or well-known entities inside the ICANN 10. So we agree with that. And I'm looking at our communications person, Michelle Jordan, who's help to fashion some communications, outside of ICANN to make sure that this gets larger play. But, all the people sitting in this virtual room are a really valuable resource for this. And
Yes, and that's well, thanks for repeating that call for help to the community members. Please notify those you find appropriate by all means, both about the upcoming session in Toronto and also about the RFI and any other matter that you find appropriate. So we know we frequently get a lot of help from you, and most certainly we got a lot of help from you today. Thanks very much for your input, and I think we've reached the 90-minute line, more or less, this minute. So
we've almost.
Kurt, would you like to some final words before we close?
We have two more callers, and people that invested this much time in showing up and participating. I don't want to cut them off. So, Michelle or Jesse, could you get those calls to come
through? Okay.
Operator, do we have two questions in the queue?
Oh, yes, we do. We have Christina Rosette. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I put this in the chat, but I just would really encourage ICANN staff to think about it. There's a RFI outstanding. It's pretty clear what ICANN is looking for. It's very clear that the price point is an important consideration. I guess I just would strongly suggest that ICANN consider A, compressing the RFI period somewhat, and then B, deferring convening any kind of implementation group until we know whether it's actually necessary. I mean, for all we know, ICANN may receive an RFI response that's spot on, addresses all of the needs. There's no need for an implementation group, but if you go ahead and convene one, then you've got all these folks who have volunteered time that frankly didn't need to be volunteered.
Point taken, Christina. At the same time, we feel a certain urgency to really, in case we don't get such ideal solution, to advance the matters as much as we can. And perhaps, if it's not necessary in the short term, it may be very, very useful in the long term as a preparation for the review of the URS. So, well, we try to do as much as we can, and sorry for that, but we see good reasons to try to advance the matters anyway.
So, Christina, what do you think about I don't want to cut the period short, but maybe we could reach out and find out who's interested in participating, like halfway through, say, all right, have some sort of outreach to determine what sort of people are working on this, and work more actively with them on their proposals as a way to get some information earlier.
I mean, absolutely. Well, if you're talking about reaching out to potential RFI respondents, absolutely. I mean, I would think, frankly, it's in ICANN's interest to be pretty aggressive in identifying potential responders and communicating to them kind of the importance of, along with making sure that there's compliance with what's been put out so far, the price point. If you're talking about kind of lining potential implementation group participants up, sure, you could do that. I just, this is a pretty tapped out volunteer community in the first place, and it just seems to me that it's a pretty big ask of ICANN to ask people to put in time that frankly may have been wasted. And I see your point, but, that's 18 months from now. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to be particularly useful.
I think we had one more question on the line, didn't we?
Your next question or comment comes from Alan Greenberg. Please go ahead.
Oh, sorry, that was a long time ago. I just put a comment in at the time that people were talking about that we expect many cases to be really obvious. And if there are that many slam dunk, clear cut cases, then whatever the fee is shouldn't be a problem because the cost to adjudicate will be almost zero. So we just have the administrative overhead. So I think we need experience. We really don't know how this is going to turn out, and it's hard to make decisions when the variance is so large. With regard to that last bit of comment, I see nothing wrong with calling for volunteers for a group should one need to be convened, but I don't think it's rational to convene it before we have input from the RFI. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. We're 5 minutes past the 90-minute mark. Kurt, would you like to say some final words? Otherwise, from me, thank you so much, each and every one of you, for participating and contributing, and hope to see you in Toronto.
Well, I've talked quite a bit more than I normally do. I want to thank everyone also, and we'll commit to certainly getting a summary of the comments that were made in the chat room right away. I'll tell you something else we'd like feedback on is we find more and more reason to have calls like this as we learn more about the new GTLD process, whether it's the implementation of rights protection mechanisms or the processing of applications. All the stuff we argued about when we were inventing the process, often turned out to be the right stuff, but often, too, turned out that there were other issues that we haven't anticipated. And we worked through those issues, but it's best to work through those issues in this sort of community discussion and getting impact. And, this webinar sort of format is the best format we've developed so far, and we've got a number of excellent people here that have been working really hard on different ways of providing this. But if you know of tools or methods or ways we could work together a little more effectively in trying to create, a big room where we're providing free interchange, that would be terrific because that's the point. And it's a little bit awkward using this tool, but it's the best one we've found so far. So with that, I'll close also. So thanks to the 10 people sitting here in the Los Angeles office and Olaf and whatever team members he has sitting in Brussels. And thanks to all of you wherever you're sitting for a really constructive session.
Thank you, and have a very nice day, evening, night, or suitable time of the day. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect your lines.